Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is October 3rd, and the pound has continued to extend its rebound. So it's now approaching the most recent of the lower rally highs around the 117 level, only another 4 cents to go, and this has been a pretty impressive rebound. So when we zoom out and look at this on a weekly basis, we've had a decline of 27% from peak to trough, and that's not quite as large as the declines we've seen in the past, but certainly faster. And certainly there's a very oversold condition, so we have ample potential for a further extension of the rebound. It's really going to have to sustain a move up through 120 in order to question the medium-term lower step that we've seen in the value. But then what is encouraging is that the Truss administration have walked back their top rate of tax cut. So higher rate tax people will still be paying 45% instead of 40%. So that will at least placate some of the more vociferous protests. The big challenge, of course, is going to be that now Liz Truss has lost credibility. So how on earth is she going to get her program for government through? And there are going to be quite a significant number of parliamentarians are going to be very upset because now their seats are in danger, and nobody likes the thought of being suddenly made unemployed. So they're probably going to get rid of her after the local elections in May of next year. But that's leaving precious little time to find a new prime minister subsequently, unless, of course, they speed up the process considerably. Now, when we think about the stock market, well, it was well supported by the devaluation of the pound. But then last week we had this acceleration lower in US dollar terms. So with the pound starting to recover, then that US dollar denominated chart is starting to rebound. And in local currency terms, we've got a very deep oversold condition. So there's certainly the potential for an unwinding of the short term oversold condition overall. But realistically, it's going to have to do more than that. It's going to have to at least break back up into that overhead trading range, ideally push back above the 200-day moving average in order to really confirm that we're back in a medium-term demand-dominated environment. So we have short-term scope for a rebound, and I think subsequently people will be looking to take profits because the economic outlook remains really quite uncertain. Now, natural gas prices are coming down, and they're still at multiples of where they were a year ago, but they're definitely coming down. So we're going to have a lot of volatility, and that's easily predictable. We've had the first cold snap in Europe, and demand was exactly where it should be for that kind of cold snap at this time of the year. So we haven't seen any diminution of demand, but available supply to restock storage is going to be rather difficult to come by. What that suggests is that we've had forced buying to restock quickly, and now we're starting to see prices unwinding that forced buying pressure. But then, as we get later into this year and early next year, then that's when shortages are going to start to be factored in. And if we have a cold winter, we can be pretty sure that we're going to have quite a lot of volatility, both up and down. So in the short term, there is downward scope, and then we're probably going to have a very choppy market for at least the next 6 to 9 months. Natural gas prices in the USA were also in negative territory today, but still not pulling back below the 200-day moving average, and in fact, finishing out the day more or less right in that region. So, this is still a very choppy environment, but there's a clear sequence of higher reaction lows. Now, OPEC came out over the weekend and said that they're going to cut supply by 1 million barrels a day. And oil prices were up about $3. Now, it has not yet broken the sequence of lower rally highs, and that's been in play now for most of the last 4 months. But upside follow-through tomorrow would make a better case that we've seen a low of more than short-term significance. And there's nothing to say that OPEC won't act even further and constrict supply even more. But of course, the reason that they're doing that is because prices have been weak. And prices have been weak because demand is starting to abate. So this is continuing to point towards lower economic growth overall. Now, when we think about the major oil companies, Petrobras in particular was up in a very dynamic manner in here today. The Brazilian real was also quite a bit stronger, and it's still holding this, the dollar is still trending lower against it with a sequence of lower rally highs. But the reason is that the result of the election didn't give Lula quite the same degree of support that many were expecting. And there's going to be a runoff election, and Bolsonaro got a lot more of the vote than people were anticipating as well. So the Bovespa index was up in a really quite significant manner in here today. And that's on the back of a strong currency, too. So there's the potential here that people are starting to look at Brazil, but they're looking at it for two reasons. One is the politics, that the potential for the left-wing arm of the opposition, led by Lula da Silva, who presided over one of the most corrupt administrations anywhere, regaining power wouldn't really be a good thing. So that prospect that he may not be the one in power is being greeted by investors rather well. But then it's also that Brazil's inflation rate has already peaked. It peaked in July. So the Bank of Brazil is talking about cutting interest rates. It may be among the first countries in the world to begin cutting interest rates, not like in Turkey, where they're just cutting them for the sake of cutting them, but rather because inflation has in fact peaked. And when we then think about the financial sector, well, PagSeguro is rebounding from its recent low. When we think about some of the bigger banks, Itaú Unibanco is also a share that's rebounding back in the region of its peaks from the last 4 years. When we think about Brazil, I think the number one thing that comes to people's minds is dividends. Now, the banking sector doesn't pay the kind of dividends that really attract interest, but Petrobras certainly does, with a dividend of over 30%. When we look at Brazil, well, we can see that you can certainly get in control of inflation if you have positive real interest rates. We don't have positive real interest rates. And the 10-year yield was in negative territory in here today, down 18 basis points. It did bounce, however, from the 3.5% level. Now, it's also worth considering that demand is starting to return for bonds at the shorter end of the curve. So, the 2-year was down 16 basis points and still holding here around the 4% level. Investors are no longer talking about TINA, which is there is no alternative. The reality is now that there is an alternative. You can just buy bonds and capture your 4%. Chatting with one of the other people on the board of Nevada Trust Company last week, and she was saying that she was able to get a home renovation loan for 2.73%. And she basically just took out more than she needed because with the excess, she was just going to buy the 2-year treasury and pick up the interest rate differential and use some of that interest to help her pay down the loan. And these are the kinds of very simple things that people with access to very cheap credit can make available to themselves. So 4% is in the ballpark of where people can start to put cash to work. Of course, when we think about that, it also means that a lot of bad news has been priced in. That stocks have pulled back aggressively, inflationary pressures have been worrying, but yields have gone up a lot already. Just looking at this chart, in October of last year, the 2-year yield was a lot closer to 25 basis points than 4%. So this has been a really significant advance already in the yield, and it's going to start to create demand. It's also a significant hurdle rate over which other assets have to climb in order to become attractive, because this is completely risk-free. Obviously, if you were going to talk about the risk of inflation or the risk of the dollar rolling over, then it's not risk-free. But if you're talking about simply getting back what you invested at plus a 4% handle, then you are guaranteed. But with yields starting to pause, then silver popped on the upside in here today. This was a really big upward dynamic. $1.72 on a $20 instrument is a really significant move. It stands out too on the weekly chart. And silver is now testing the sequence of lower rally highs and the region of both the 1,000-day and 200-day moving averages. So if we can get upside follow-through and it can push up through the 1,000-day moving average and break the sequence of lower rally highs, well, then we'll have clear evidence of more than simply short-term steadying action. So stronger action by silver is also positive for gold, and gold is closing out the day at $1,700. So this is the first area of potential resistance. It's bounced from the $1,600 area, so we've had nearly a $100 move in just the last 2 weeks, or really just the last 8 trading sessions. So this is a really significant event. We've had a significant decline too. So we've also had some big counter trend rallies. So what we definitely need to see is that the sequence of lower rally highs is broken, that it can sustain a move back above the $1,700 area. That will begin to suggest that it's a failed downside break, both below the low from early 2021 and the low or and the 1,000-day moving average. But certainly the action that we've seen is more encouraging. And one thing that I think is also relevant, there's a lot of talk about interest expense and the significant run-up that we've had in the in bond yields and what that means for the wider economy. So the St. Louis Fed produces this chart, and we've had a meaningful move higher in interest expense. Now, it was only updated through the end of June, but in the end, at the end of June, interest rates were at 2.25. At the previous peak in 2019, the interest rate was around 1.75 or 2, excuse me. At the end of the second quarter, it was at 1.75. It's now significantly higher. At the end of this hiking cycle, it was at 2.25. So the interest expense has gone up significantly with the quantity of debt. And it's going to go up even more because the debt has continued to expand and interest rates are higher today than they were at the end of the second quarter. By the end of the year, it's reasonable to anticipate that the interest expense on the debt, and this is of course an annualized figure, will be somewhere in the region of, I'm going to say around 700 billion. So we're talking about a significant move here. And the reason it's not causing more strife is because tax receipts are at an all-time high. So we've had just continued demand. Lots of people still out there spending, and certainly the quantity of cash on the sidelines that's being held in savings is being spent down. But until we start to see that tax receipts are disappointing on the downside, well, then that's going to be something that would be really detrimental to bonds. And it would suggest that there's going to have to be some form of fiscal consolidation. Now, nobody's talking about fiscal consolidation right now. So the dollar index is pausing following a big move on the upside. It will really need to sustain a move down through 110 in order to break this uptrend. And with the dollar starting to roll over and some downward pressure on yields, the S&P 500 was in positive territory today and bouncing from the 3600 level. I made a point in the big picture audio and video on Friday that the Nasdaq is back below the 1,000-day moving average. It was also in positive territory today. So we've had a broadly more positive outlook for stock markets. Brazil was up 5% today. It's the only major market that's actually in positive territory for the year in both nominal and currency adjusted terms. The only other market that's even close is Indonesia. And the Indonesian market is bouncing from the region of the 200-day moving average, but it's up about 7% on local currency terms for the year and pretty much flat on currency adjusted terms. So it's certainly holding this breakout from what was a 4-year range and putting in a first step above that range, which is still encouraging. The Indian market has been quite weak over the last couple of weeks. It was up in a dynamic manner on Friday, gave up some of that advance in here today. The banking sector is coming out of a deleveraging cycle. So it was in negative territory today, but now coming back into the region of the 200-day moving average, it's a clear area where we might anticipate some support coming through. And China is closed this week for Golden Week, for the Mid-Autumn Festival, even though the festival was 2 weeks ago. So they timed the announcement of clear supports for the property sector for the holiday. So they're trying to minimize volatility, but the currency was a little stronger and copper prices were steadier. So we are seeing more evidence of monetary support coming through and fiscal support coming through. Now, it's hard to say where the money is going to come from to both support the currency and to provide assistance to the property sector, but at least confidence is beginning to return and they are instructing banks to buy currency. So I think the strength in the currency is more short term. The supports that are being put in place for the property market are certainly important. It avoids the potential in the short term that there's going to be a crash in China. Then it also helps to answer the big question. Where's the liquidity going to come from to fuel a recovery? So China is now stimulating. That's an important aspect to the global liquidity situation. If the dollar were to continue to contract, it would also let other currencies appreciate and create buying opportunities, and they would start to attract inward investment from overseas. So that would be an additional source of new liquidity. We obviously have the UK has embarked upon this big pro-cyclical stimulus package. Now, that's not going to control inflation, but it is a source of new liquidity. So we did have these dynamic moves in gold and silver in here today, and Bitcoin prices are steadying once more and attempting to come back up into this 20,000 handle. We've got a lot of oversold conditions, so it's quite likely that we're going to see some pause and consolidation, or at least an unwinding of short-term oversold conditions. But Tesla was in sharply negative territory in here today. They missed at their deliveries of new vehicles by about 15,000. And that doesn't sound like a lot, but because of the valuation of the company, it just can't afford to disappoint. So the share is rolling over in here. And one has to always be worried about a bank that sends out not one, but two memos to its employees to tell them that the balance sheet is fine and that the company is going to survive. How bad do things have to be before a CEO has to pen one of those memos? So Credit Suisse has been trending downwards in a really dynamic manner and accelerated lower over the course of the last 2 weeks. So it was off its lows in here today, and there's certainly the potential for a rebound in the short term. But the big challenge for Credit Suisse over the medium term is that Swiss banking secrecy isn't the same today as it was a decade ago. So we've had a what's looking like a terminal decline, and there's going to have to be a lot of changes in order to sustain any kind of recovery. At the very minimum, it's going to have to deal with the failed overseas expansion, and that's going to be expensive. So we might see a rebound in the short term, but it's unlikely that Credit Suisse is going to be the star of a new bull market. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.